Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Okay, you can really feel the energy here in the Pearl River Delta, PRD for short. Trade show season is just getting started, and I'm getting tons of messages from people who are coming through for the Canton Fair, Global Sources Fair, and even some of you awesome people coming to our first annual cross-border summit. So just tons of energy, and I'm actually recording today's intro on the cross-border bus and just getting my seat. I bumped into Leo, who was on episode 88 with us on seasteading. So how's it going, Leo?
Yeah, it's great. I had a good trip through the Pearl River Delta, and it's awesome. You travel through an area with 80 million people, and then you see Michael on the bus, and now we have the beautiful Hong Kong skyline passing us. So it's really great.
Yeah, it's about, 45-minute, I think, bus ride from where we're at the Shenzhen Bay border to, well, we're going to Kowloon side. So I think it's like 45 minutes, this bus ride.
Yeah, and it takes only 15 minutes to cross, even when it's as crowded as it was today.
Yeah, we were just saying we bumped into Israeli, I don't know, retirement community cross-border trip or something.
Yeah, with everybody having like two large bags of luggage. But they seem to have been having a very good time, too. I don't know what they were up to, but a good trip.
Yeah, so I kind of tripped over their bags and like, trying to get past them. But this is cool. I don't know. I was really thinking about it. Our lives are very unique, crossing this border and all these people and buses and boats and whatever other kind of vehicles we do. But it's cool to bump into you here. And what is it now? 9:30 on a Sunday night. So you had the whole weekend in Guangzhou.
Very much looking forward to see you at the cross-border summit.
Okay. Yeah, it's going to be a great event. I'm trying not to stress out the last week before the insanity cranks up. But great, man. Let's enjoy the rest of this week. And now for our show. We got a good one talking about counterfeits in China. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another Global from Asia podcast. We have with us Hugo Garcia Cote. Thank you for being here, Hugo.
My pleasure.
So we've been in touch through the startup community here in Shenzhen for quite a few years, and our common friend Sean actually introduced us or gave me the idea to get you on the show today. So you've been on your own venture now for quite some time, and do you mind giving listeners a little bit of an introduction of yourself and your company?
Yes, of course. So I'm Hugo Garcia-Cote. I did a French grande école. Then I did a double degree in Tsinghua in Beijing. I'm fluent in Mandarin. Straight out of university, I've been trying to do my own startup. I've been doing whatever I could, consulting, outsourcing, whatever I could just to be independent, self-sufficient. And as soon as I could switch to a full-time startup, that's what I did. So that would be Saifim. So in a nutshell, Saifim, we are anti-counterfeit technology. We really focus on the technological part of anti-counterfeit. It's the tech itself is a bit complicated, but more or less we're able to detect counterfeit products by analyzing the microstructure of paper. It is some super cool tech right there to be able to bust fakes.
Awesome. Yeah, so let's get into a little bit of the market. So a lot of our listeners are, you know, import, export, e-commerce entrepreneurs around the world. And of course, they're buying from Chinese factories. They're searching Alibaba, Global Sources, and probably selling on Amazon or their own websites. So I liked your website, and I was kind of reading it preparing for the show, and you say counterfeits kill more than malaria. Do you want to give us some numbers here or some background?
Oh yeah, it's insane. I mean, before I was working on this product, I also didn't know about counterfeits at all. I mean, for me, counterfeits was pretty much Rolex watches and LVMH bags, Louis Vuitton bags. And if somebody wants to buy a fake Rolex, then who cares, you know? That was pretty much my vision of counterfeits. But actually, in the recent years, it became much, much worse than that. like now you have counterfeits in every single sector. You have counterfeit liquors, you have counterfeit cosmetics, but also you have counterfeit pharmaceuticals, counterfeit tobacco, really nasty stuff. And if you add up all the deaths by counterfeits, it's about 700,000 a year, which is more than the deaths through malaria or the deaths through war, or it's just insane. Like, it is one of our society's biggest problem, and nobody know about it. Nobody care about it, because it's not something that happens at our doorstep.
True. I mean, it's also, I guess, doesn't seem like it's so harmful. And I don't know, I don't endorse counterfeit, but personally, I kind of get a little chuckle because I remember I lived in New York City for quite a few years, and there's Chinatown, and they'll have like the back door behind the normal store that has like the fake products. And then, you know, it's kind of just like a funny or kind of like a cat and mouse where the New York police would raid different shops and you would see a sign on the front that said like shut down, like New York police, you know, caught them. And then it went to eBay. I remember eBay, everybody's selling online and buying fake Oakleys from China online and then selling them online. And so I think maybe that's why people don't pay so much attention. They don't think it's really harmful, but is it more the consumables, or is it actually like, that's probably more like if I drink liquor, fake liquor, or I take a fake pill?
So the thing is, pretty much everything which is easy to manufacture and which has a high added value is highly counterfeited those days. And it goes like to very dangerous things like car parts or even more scary, airplane parts. Literally, airplane parts. That's a super big market for counterfeits. And anything from things you smoke, you drink, you eat, or even just medicine. It is so easy to make a fake pill that looks exactly like the medicine, and to make a fake box, and that's it. You sell it to someone who doesn't know about it. You know, in some African countries, 7 medicine out of 10 are fake.
Horrible.
Do you imagine that? Imagine you're in a country which is already super poor to begin with. You're ill. You manage to save enough money to buy medicine. Maybe you have to borrow from your relatives to be able to buy a medicine. And not only it's not going to heal you at all, but maybe they would have put some shitty chemicals in it to give it a weird taste, and it could even harm you. It's insane. It's insane. It's a crazy market. Like, now the mafia, they stop doing drugs because that's too hard to if you get caught. They just sell counterfeit tobacco instead.
Oh, man.
It's super harmful for your health. And it sells the same as drugs, and it's super easy to get away with.
Got it. I mean, and your cat doesn't like it either, I don't think.
Yeah, no.
cool. She's in the show. That's cool. Yeah, I mean, as this again more from your research and your website and your blog, like, it's pretty amazing numbers. But a third of Chinese smartphones are fake.
Yes. The scary part is the counterfeiters, they will enter the supply chain just at any time. Like, there was a scandal recently where they managed to find a large amount of counterfeit cosmetics in American Walmarts. Can you imagine that?
Oh, man.
That's because some Mexican drug lords just saw an opportunity somewhere in the supply chain, and they would swap boxes full of genuine cosmetics with fake cosmetics. It's so much easier to produce, and then they would resell the genuine cosmetics on another channel. So if they can do it in the US, imagine in China. It's insane. Like, you know, Jingdong is supposed to be a safe place to buy electronics. Well, 40% of the products or Jingdong are fake. I mean, the brands try their best to fight it, but it is just not something you can fight. Like, it's enough that the guy who delivers the phone swap a real with a fake one. Nobody will ever know about it. Not the customer, not Jingdong, no one.
Yeah, I got a real story there. I bought off, or my wife helps me buy off Jingdong, and I got a tablet phone and it says Samsung. I opened it and there was pictures of somebody else already on the phone. It looked brand new. I don't know. And then anyway, it's some crazy stuff happening.
We saw insane stories, really insane stories. Like a friend of mine bought an iPhone 5S and it looked totally genuine. It had a Touch ID, which was working. He's an engineer, so he would plug it and analyze it with the Apple developer kit. And he would say, everything's fine. It's a 5S. And the day he upgraded iOS, he discovered that actually it was an iPhone 5. And they managed to flash software from a 5S inside. And they even managed to change the button with a Touch ID button, because you know the iPhone 5 didn't have the fingerprint reader. And they managed to make it work.
Crazy.
That's the crazy part. So you imagine if they're able to just buy a lot of iPhone 5 and turn them into iPhone 5S, the margin is enormous. Well, not nowadays, but when the 5S was just out, the margin was enormous.
Crazy.
And that's just even for store who are willing to buy the real thing. But if when you walk in the streets in China, you have tons and tons of fake Apple stores. Well, you have some which are super obvious, of course, but you have some Huawei store, you're not sure. It looks clean, but on the other hand, they don't only sell Huawei phones, so maybe there's something in there. And the truth is, you never know. You never know. In the end, if 30% of the smartphones in China are fake, is because everybody got screwed at one point or another, including me, including you.
Yeah.
And we never know about it.
Yeah, I mean, you're scaring me as we discuss this. And there's also fake food, fake eggs, fake meat, or like, it's crazy.
It's like fake liquor, for example. 80% of the liquors are fake in China. 80%. And I did a test with a friend of mine who is a wholesale in fine French liquors. I showed him to a shop where I was sure it's fake, and I showed him to a shop where I was sure it's genuine. And we compared both. We did not see any difference whatsoever. None at all. Like, we looked every single detail of the bottle, of the cork, of the color. He had no way to tell, and he's an expert. So imagine how easy it is to just go into a warehouse and swap a few bottles here or there. Who will notice? No one.
Because I remember when I first came to China a while back, 2007, and I did bar products online for quite a few years. And I was talking to bar owners in China or in Shenzhen, and they were tired of buying fake liquor from the distributors. Even though they're the official distributor, they said they weren't sure if it was distributor purposely doing it to make more margin or where it was happening in the supply chain, but they were sure they were getting fake liquor and they wanted to try to buy it directly somehow to make sure it was real. And I was thinking it's very early stage. I was like, maybe I can help them. And I was working with a lawyer for my company setup, and she says, don't do that because the mafia is like controlling that. And, you know, if you start messing with their business, they'll look you up. So,
yeah, there are crazy stories. I've met someone who worked in brand enforcement in tobacco. Well, this story did not happen in China. It happened in Russia. But he told me that one time they tried to raid a factory that was producing fake cigarettes. And they came with the national police, of course, because the local police is so corrupt. And there was a gunfight between the national police and the local police. The local police trying to protect the factory and the national police trying to raid it. And they had a bloody gunfight.
Crazy.
It is just inimaginable. But it's true. It's true.
Oh, man. Yeah, so I guess we've scared listeners enough and I'm scared enough. So maybe I don't want this to be like a pure advertisement for your startup.
No, of course.
How did you get into, you know, how did this come about? I remember actually your startup weekend pitch in Shenzhen was a good one. It was, I think, a little bit different, but it seems like you've been kind of interested in this type of a space for, I think yours was like a, this is really long time ago, but something about safety and alerting people that if you're safe or not. So it seems like you've always been interested in that kind of space. Is that correct? Or maybe how did you get into this?
Actually, it's a long story. I've been always interested in cryptography and this kind of stuff. And actually, we had a project which was in document protection. And we started working on it for a while. And then we flew to the Silicon Valley to go through the 500 Startups Accelerator. I'll talk more about it after.
Sure.
And actually, we had an accident in the team. It's a grim story, but one of our co-founders' mother nearly died because of counterfeit medicine.
Horrible.
Yeah. Well, she's fine now. Don't worry about it. But at the time, it really shocked us. And we discovered this world we didn't even know about. I mean, since then, we've searched a lot on the market. And in some Chinese stores, you have some medicines which are counterfeited up to 80%. And in normal stores. And if you go to stores like Carrefour or Walmart in China, it goes down to 10%. Like, what chance did she have in a poor Chinese province to just buy the real thing? Basically none. And well, she's fine now, but it really shocked us. So we said, okay, there's something completely horrible here, completely unfair. Nobody know about it. We have to do something about it. And we decided to fight this war. We literally said, okay, now we're on a crusade. We're on a crusade against counterfeit. And even though we're in the Silicon Valley, we're working in document protection, we will pivot, we'll change our technology, and we will move to China to be at the front in this war. And that's literally how we started fighting counterfeit, because the technology we used could be applied to things rather than documents.
Sure. I get it. Very interesting. So, yeah, let's maybe talk about your 500 Startups experience. I mean, that's kind of was next on my list. And how did that come about?
It was really awesome. We went there through a friend. Actually, it was not really through our startup. We went there like kind of with him to see how it goes. And it was really an unforgettable experience, honestly. I mean, there was so many smart people from so many different places. Like, actually, 60% of the batch were non-Americans, which is, like, crazy high in the startup scene, in American accelerator. And when I say non-American, they were not from Europe or England. No, they were from country you've never been, like Lithuania or Argentina or Brazil. And their startup were very successful. They were all... They all had a really unique story to tell. Like, also, there were 60% of female founders. And when I say female founders, it's like female CEO or a team just full of girls. And you have to be a unique person to go that far. Being a Uruguayan female, you really have to be somebody unique. Spending a couple of months with those guys was so inspiring. Really an experience I will never, ever forget.
Awesome. And so then, of course, there's demo day and fundraising, and you're back in China now. So I don't know how much you're willing or able to share, but I saw on your site you're an Emmy Lab, which is a hardware incubator in Shenzhen. Maybe, I don't know, connect us from 500 Startups to Emmy Lab if you can, or at least however you want to kind of give us the story a little bit.
There is not that much connection between 500 Startup and Emmy Lab. Actually, Emmy is a hardware company, and they invest a lot in startups for two reasons. If you have a cool hardware, you can go to Emmy Lab, and they will help you distribute your hardware. Because they are a very famous hardware company in China. So they most definitely can help you do that. In our case, it's a bit different because they make very beautifully designed power banks. And they have a huge counterfeit issue in China. In some markets, like really their market is divided by four. when you take all the fake products out.
Crazy.
So they really wanted to do something about it. And that's why they decided to invest in us. And that's why we're in their accelerator.
Okay. I'm a little bit curious how that program works. I mean, maybe for other listeners, maybe interested. Is it like an open application, or is it like your relationships, or is it money and shares? Is it maybe if you're willing or able, or maybe I guess it seems like it's different for each kind of case.
It's the ME Lab started to be open to foreign startup not that long ago. So, but it's a pretty open application. You can just go to a website and apply, and they're really looking for interesting products that could work well in China, and they have lots of foreign staff who can review the application. But yeah, basically it's like any accelerator. I would say the big advantage of ME Lab is that first it is run by actual entrepreneurs. Like, you have so many accelerators out there that are run by venture capitalists. And I'm sorry to say, but the less experienced venture capitalists actually don't know a thing about entrepreneurship. Of course, they pretend they do, but the truth is they don't. And only the top tier VCs, like the ones you can get at Y Combinator or 500 Startup, only those guys are actual former entrepreneurs. So they have advices that are worth to be heard. But to find an accelerator which is actually run by the founders of a startup, that's super rare. And that's, I would say, the main point about ME Lab. Sure, it might not be super famous at the moment, but it is actually run by the founders of ME. And they've all been, like, they've been through an IPO, so they know what they're talking about. And to be able to meet on a daily basis an entrepreneur that went through IPO, that's really precious. And his advices are real. Hands-on advices, not, you know, I know a lot about things, so I give you advice. Well, actually, most VC don't know those things. They've seen companies succeed and fail, but they never had their own company. So that's why I really value the advice we get from ME Lab.
Cool, great.
And to be honest, I'm super happy to be there.
Yeah, so... how does the program work? Is it money for equity? Is it space? Or is it like a certain time program with like a certain stop? Or
it really depends on the company. But I guess the basic idea is if you have a cool product, a nice design, and well done, good idea, you can go to the ME Lab. They will propose you a package, equity and cash. And they provide a lot of services. Of course, they provide a space, but they provide a lot of direct sales help. So all the channels where ME products are sold, which is a lot in China nowadays, they will help you push your products. And they really go to great lengths to help startups, which is rare. There are definitely too many fake accelerators out there who just steal your equity and give you a little bit of cash. Well, that's not the case with ME Lab. They might be a bit more picky on the projects, but they, when they want to help, they mean it.
Great, exciting. Glad you're so excited with it and doing
thank
well.
You. Honestly, I if it was not that great, I wouldn't say so.
Okay, sure. I'm sure that's great. Let's go next to, I guess we talked about the problem you're trying to solve, and I'm thinking of our listeners. We, you know, like I said, they're smaller business owners, mostly entrepreneurs. Could they use your solution, or are you targeting like Apple and Samsung, or are you targeting like kind of like small to medium-sized enterprises that could somehow protect their IP or their product right in the factory?
The thing is, we are really trying to solve a problem, a society problem. That's truly our goal. Of course, if the volumes are really too low, we can't help. But even with medium volumes, we are happy to help. The thing is, like, usually people think of counterfeit as, well, I'm not Apple, I'm not Samsung, so counterfeiters won't target me, so I'm not really scared about it. The thing is, that's not how counterfeits work. Like, once counterfeiters have targeted you, it's just too late. Like, once you are the Louis Vuitton of this world, and every single Chinese person have a fake Louis Vuitton bag, it is too late. There is no stopping them. There is no stopping them. So, you know, it's like burglars. They will open the door, which is the easiest to unlock. So if your products have a small protection, maybe not even ours, by the way, but if your products at least have some sort of protection, they will probably counterfeit somebody else's product. And don't think that counterfeit is a free publicity, because it is not. It is crappy publicity, where people buy a product they think is great, and then they have a Shanghai thing, and they never come back to you again. So if your company is growing fast and you haven't had counterfeits yet, you should be worried and you should protect yourself now. With us or with someone else, it doesn't matter, but you should protect yourself before it's too late.
So, yeah, I forgot to mention in my notes, you said like 59% of consumers that buy fake products blame you, right? Blame the brand?
Yeah, actually, this data is really hard to gather, but we found a very extensive survey that showed that in most industries, 59% of the people who just bought fakes didn't know about it. Just did not know about it. So now imagine you are a brand selling a hoverboard, for example, and then your user buy your product and then it catches fire. What will he think? He will think your brand is just shit, even though it's not your fault. It's just a random factory who made counterfeit of your brand. They didn't want to bother inventing a new logo and doing some new press. Sold it somewhere on Amazon and that's it. Done. Done. It's bad publicity for you, not for them. They don't care.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So medium-sized companies, said not small. Is there any kind of numbers you can share, like costs or at least volumes or investment needed to take some action either with, you know, your solution or others?
It really depends on the volume. Pretty much if you're selling more than 10,000 pieces a month, we can help you. We're focused on high-end hardware and cosmetics. So if you're in this area, we'll be even more happy to help you.
Okay.
Anyway, as I said, we're really trying to solve a problem here.
Okay.
I mean, the people who do fake cosmetics, they will also do fake something else. They are the same people. Because anyways, they are not the one to produce the fake goods. They just put the logo on it. So we're pretty much happy to help anyone in need.
Okay, great. So I think that's a good way to wrap things up. You seem very passionate. Can you maybe share your website and any other way people can reach out to you and your company?
Oh, yes, of course. Well, you can check our website, cypheme.com, cypheme.com, cypheme.com. And really feel free to just drop me an email at hugo@cypheme.com. That's my personal email I use all the time. And I'm always happy to answer questions. And I'm always happy to help.
Awesome. Thanks.
Because we're sure it's a business, but we've suffered from counterfeits. We know what it is. So we really want to make a difference. And that's pretty much the idea.
That's what it's all about, right? I think that's something else startups or entrepreneurs or business owners should think about, right? Solving a problem first. So that and have a passion to help those people. So you're definitely on the right track, and I wish you the best, Hugo.
Thank you very much. Yeah, our tech is really interesting to see in action, because it's something you don't expect. Like just with a smartphone camera, you can take a picture of a piece of paper, and we're able to analyze the microstructure of the paper. And just with one picture, we're able to tell if it's genuine or if it's counterfeit. It sounds like magic, but it's very real.
Cool. All right. Thanks again. And that's a wrap.
Okay, I'm still on the bus here, just doing a post-production recording. And thank you, Hugo, for sharing. I actually bumped into him at the Startup Salad event just this past weekend, and he's such a hard worker and a hustler. And I was just saying, dude, you know, I'm putting this show online. How much does this stuff cost? And, you know, he keeps saying it depends. So I hope he listens, takes a little bit of advice and tries to standardize the pricing. But he gave me a rough estimate and doesn't want to be held accountable, but maybe 10 cents per piece for like 1,000 to 5,000 pieces. So even if you're like doing a 1,000 piece order and you want to make sure that it's your genuine order, I would try Hugo. He's definitely a tech geek, and he needs to get a little bit better on his sales side, or I want to help him out too a little bit. But give him a shout, try out his product. He's got a good team and a good idea. And I think that there should be better ways to track counterfeits in China. Yeah, you can reach out to him, and it's reasonable even if you're like doing small to medium size orders. So that's a wrap, guys. I have to get back scrambling to produce the first cross-border summit. So next week we'll have Mia, who's been our event manager, on to share how the event went, which I don't know how it's going to go, but I know it's going to rock. So take care, guys. See you next week.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.